Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we are joined by somebody whose methods and style we admire quite a lot. We were joined a while back by author of Gap Selling, Keenan. Today's guest is no stranger to that method. So from head of sales to general manager of training and licensing, today's guest lives and breathes gap selling. So their win rate is 60% plus. They raise win rates by 10 to 30% on average in 3 months, and they never ever discount. Today's guest is Rachel May. Rachel, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me here.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us. Obviously, we are big fans. We've had Keenan on the podcast before, so we're excited to delve into your views and your opinions on sales and selling and everything that's right and wrong with it. So we start the podcast the same way every single time. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Well, my name is Rachel May. As you say, I work with Keenan and Gap Selling at a sales growth company. And we solve the problem of low win rates, long average deal cycles, heavy discounting resulting in lowering of average sales price. And we do that by helping the sales organization adopt a foundation of buyer and problem centricity across the entire revenue engine, from demand gen all the way to retention.
Good stuff. I like it. And then, so say you're sitting down with somebody and you're going to help them and they've got the problems that you solve. What are some of the telltale symptoms? So if you were a doctor and I were coming into you, what kind of symptoms would I have that say, you know what, we need to send Rachel, we need to send Keenan and all the gap selling specialists in there?
Well, usually we find out if they have those particular business problems in their sales organization currently, which, let's face it, most do. And then we start to dive down into, okay, what's causing those things? It could be any number of things. But typically what we find at the root cause is that not just the salespeople, but the entire sales organization, marketing, leadership, lead gen, the SDRs, the AEs, customer success, even sometimes product themselves, cannot tell me what problems their product and services solves for, that in a way that is not just in telling me what the product does from a technical standpoint. So it's one of the first questions I ask in discovery: what business problems does your product or service solve better or differently than anyone else in the space? And I can count on like one hand out of hundreds and hundreds how many times I've actually been able to get a real answer to that question. So that's the biggest symptom.
So I suppose it's probably worth us taking a step back. How would you define gap selling for anyone who isn't familiar with it?
Yeah, so usually when I explain it to folks, and it's hard for me because it's hard for us sometimes in the messaging to help people really understand why it's different. But I usually describe it as the language that we speak about our buyer internally and to our buyer externally. It's the way that we think about them. It's the way that we think about every single thing we build in the product. It's a foundation of problem centricity that goes from the entire revenue engine, from MQL all the way to retention. It's not a sales methodology, it's a revenue methodology.
Okay. And one thing that you talked about before that I don't think it comes up in the book a lot, and we had a few interesting points from Keenan on this, but if you're looking at gap selling from a purely cold perspective, you've got limited resources, maybe you've got a phone, access to an email, or you're an SDR, or you're that function that has to get the meeting or get the person on the phone and do something from those early steps, what could we adopt from gap selling in those early stages of selling?
Yeah, so I think, again, it would all start with that problem identification chart, which actually you can download that from our website. It would start with like building out a problem identification chart. If that's the first thing that I would do if I was in any business development role. And what that is it's basically like, here are the root causes. Those are those like technical problems that you solve, right? So it's too slow, it's inefficient, why? And kind of thinking of all those broken processes or missing tools. Things like when you hear visibility, there's, we solve for visibility, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff's gonna go into that root cause bucket, right? And then you start to go through this mental exercise. If that's happening in this hospital or in this school district or whatever sector that you're solving into, right? If that's happening, what is happening to the business? And these are usually going to have metrics involved. So I like to think about that persona that I sell to, CFO, COO, CIO, whoever this person is, and then take that vertical that you're selling into, hospital, education, construction, whatever that is. And I start to think about what metrics are they looking at every single day and looking to improve every single day? And how is this kind of root cause technical problem I solve impacting those numbers, right? That's generally where you're going to find your business problem. And you only solve 3 to 5, maybe like 3 to 5 that you really want to lock in on. And then I go, okay, if that exists, then what? So what? And then move yourself just one step higher than that. So move yourself one step higher above that persona that you sell into and think about, what are they talking about at a board meeting? And how does that business problem impact those problems? This is usually where you're going to get to revenue. You're usually going to get to, you know, slow growth, declining revenue, poor reputation in the marketplace, high employee churn, right? These in the impacts, you're going to find the things that don't just impact the department level that you sell into, but the whole organization. They're going to impact everybody. The things that like might result in a layoff or something like that if they are not mitigated, right? And so start to thread those three buckets through. And once you understand that big picture, what I usually say at the prospecting level is you lead with the business problem, you sell to the business impact, and you gain credibility by diagnosing root cause. So in your messaging, in every cold call, in your marketing, everything you're doing from a lead gen standpoint should hit all of those three buckets in a very concise way that surprises that prospect into thinking, wow, I never thought about it that way before. I never tied those three things together. Wow, that's at the root cause of this thing that's making me crazy. Who knew? Right? And that's where that credibility piece comes in. So everything that would be my North Star is that problem identification chart. And I'd be checking every single conversation I have against it.
We were using it today internally to work on a client. So we are big fans of it. We're really big at tangible takeaways for the audience, the people listening. So I guess once you've laid that out and you've got somebody talking a little bit, what are some of your favorite questions to uncover impact and uncover problems and uncover emotion and probably help find the gap when it comes to discovery or cold calling?
Yeah, so everybody since I have been in sales training, which is way too longer than I'd like to share at this point. Everybody always wants to know, what's the magic question? What are the list of questions? Can you just give me a list of questions? There's no questions, Jack. I'm sorry. There's no magic questions. But what you will find is when you know what you're looking for, the questions just come. So the best question is a response question. The best question is the question that you ask in response to the way your prospect just answered the last one. And I know that sounds like super basic, okay? But it's not what we do as salespeople. What we do is we try to think of what's a really great question, right? And we want a script. We so badly want this like recipe that says, I know that if I ask these certain questions and I do it this certain way, that, you know, I'm not going to look silly and it's going to go great and I'm going to find the problem. But that's just not the reality. The reality is you've got to sit and listen and be so present that you pause when you get that answer. And this is what I think. What information do I need that I don't have right now in order to diagnose this prospect's current state by the time we get off this call? So I'm consistently taking inventory of like what information that I have right now. And I'm kind of like, what clues are missing? And then that's the best question to ask. Is that helpful?
Very helpful, Rachel. I agree. I hear a lot of salespeople externally where when you're having a conversation with them and they'll ask a big question and they'll go, okay, great. And then on to the next one. It's like there's that through line of like, I don't know what you can call it, a bit of a je ne sais quoi of, have you actually listened and is your head three steps ahead? I wanted to ask you while we've got you here, it's in your LinkedIn banner, discounting. So discounting is something that I've literally just posted something. I had a cold email this morning saying, we can help you with your recruitment. We'll do it for 12.5, or if you're not happy with that, we'll do it for 10%. So they've not even engaged me in a conversation and they're already discounting, which is fucking crazy. But so why don't you discount? And I mean, it's a simple answer, but why don't you and gap sellers discount? And how do you handle the discounting question if it ever comes up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that discounting is manipulation. And one thing like gap sellers do not behave in is manipulative behaviors. And so when you think about how do you feel when you're in a sales process with a salesperson and you get to that last week of the month and they go, you know what, Jack, because it's the 27th and I have to meet my number, that, you know, number I gave you on the 5th, don't worry about that. You get a new one now because it benefits me. How do you feel about that person?
Scum.
Subtle Jack. Scum.
Dramatic pause there, Rachel.
Scum. Yeah. So, I mean, totally. You're like, okay, I get it. So, at the first of the month, you were going to make me into a chump. And because I waited long enough, now you're going to give me what it really cost. How long should I wait now, Jack? Right? How long should I wait? Another week? Should I wait till the end of the quarter? Maybe I should buy at the end of the quarter. Will that make what price will I get then? Right? It's manipulation. And a lot of people, I don't think, understand that this actually destroys trust with you and the salesperson. You might have done a great job all the way through discovery and built all of this great relationship, and you destroy it in an instant when you tell them that you were going to make them a chump on the 5th. But now it's the 27th. So I think the reason that we don't discount is, number one, it's a manipulation to tactic. And number two, we don't have to. We don't have to. Because when somebody says to me, your cost is too high, Rachel, and by the way, it is. We are not out here trying to be the value bargain bin sales training company. All right? Go somewhere else. Get away from us with that. That's not what we do over here. We are the sale. We know we're the premier product. We know that we are the premier product for not the crappy, sales organization that's just on fire and has, you know, nothing together. We are for the elite salespeople who want to go and get that extra 20%. We know we're pricey. It's okay. But when someone says to me, your price is too high, my question is, too high for what? I'm confused. You know, based on everything that you shared, you are going to lose $12 million if you don't solve this problem right now. And based on everything that you shared and the criteria that we built and everything you told me about who you're looking for, we are the only ones who can address the root causes for you in a way that is efficient, and we're going to raise that win rate in 3 months. So please help me understand how $50,000 is too high to solve this $12 million problem. Or I say, please help me understand why we're talking about $5,000 right now. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. I think when you hit that logical side, Keenan was talking about that a lot as well, the I'm confused question that comes up, or the I'm confused statement rather that comes up when you hit that point. I love that. We Jack's got this great thing as well around if people are starting to ask you to discount and it's the difference between you walking away and not working with them, well, you can't lose what you never had anyway. So who's to say if you start discounting that they won't use that and go away? You can't lose something you didn't have. So yeah, 100% agree. So sometimes, Rachel, we speak to businesses who they're building their first sales team. Maybe it's the, you know, I've got SDRs, I'm going to have some A's, and we actually don't have a methodology in place yet at all. So they might be looking at Spin, Sandler, Gap Selling. They could be looking at all these different methodologies, but I suppose why would someone look at Gap Selling over one of those? What benefits would I have of having my whole team on Gap Selling rather than one of those other methodologies?
Well, first, I'm just going to correct you there, Zach, because you did not list methodologies. So people are really confused about what a sales methodology is and is not, right? So like Sandler, for example, not a sales methodology. Challenger, not a sales methodology. It's a great idea. It's a great theory about sales. Those are, Sandler is kind of a bucket of tips and tricks, if you will, right? Hodgepodge together. Challenger is wonderful. I love Challenger Sale, but it's much more kind of this high level idea of what to do without a lot of like the how to do it. And a methodology has both. So it's got these overarching themes of this is the go-to-market strategy of how you meet your buyers, the internal language, if you will, of how you speak to them and about them. But then it has that what to do, how to skill focus as well, right? With that process built in. So I guess you could say that Spin in its day was a sales methodology, or solution selling was a sales methodology. First of all, I would throw out anything that was created before the internet. So let's just start there. Like, I'm not trying to be an asshole, but come on. If the things that were created in the 70s to help salespeople win worked, then we wouldn't be in the situation that we have right now, right? So if they worked, why are we still sitting here after 30, 50 years of it with low win rates? Wouldn't it all be gone by now? So I think I just start there. I just throw that out. But then I would look at what root causes in my sales organization are causing my business problems and impacts. And I would do a full diagnosis there, because different sales training, different sales methodologies are going to address different root causes. So it's not one size fits all, but when people buy sales training, they tend to just check a box. Right? They're like, oh, I need to buy sales training. I hear this all the time. It doesn't matter which methodology you pick, just pick one. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, that makes no sense. Just pick one. This is literally the health of your entire sales organization. Maybe we don't like put it all into a hat and like pick one out. Maybe we be a little bit more thoughtful about that, right? And so I would say understand what root causes you're solving for, and then make some appointments, some discovery calls with them, some salespeople from those sales methodologies, and watch the way they sell. Because they are your demo. They are your end product, right? So watch the way that they do discovery. Do they start jumping in and talking about their product and giving you a presentation and talking about training? Are there questions about sales training, which is their product, or are there questions about your business as a whole? Do they help you during that process to diagnose what root causes you're solving for and help you to understand what you need to do differently with your sales team, whether you ever do business with them or not? When you get to the recommendation stage and you start to ask about discounting, do they discount? Because I could tell you one thing, I sure as hell ain't not hiring the sales training company that has to discount their own product. If their salespeople can't hold their value, why the hell would I want them training mine?
Yeah,
Like, that
absolutely.
doesn't make any sense, right? So, that's a process that I would use.
Okay. So it sounds like from what you're saying, there are scenarios in your world where someone needs sales training, but due to the root causes that you address, actually gap selling isn't going to be the right fit.
Well, I would say when those scenarios come up, it's typically that they don't need that sales training in itself and the sales process in itself and the skills of the sales team are not actually the root cause of their problems. So typically when I find someone who's not a good fit for gap selling, it isn't because it's a different methodology that they should be using. It's that they don't have product market fit, or they have horrible leadership, or they have a toxic work culture, or the reason that their salespeople can't sell is because the product itself is overpriced against the competition and not offering anything else, or it doesn't have that differentiator, right? So I'm looking for all of those things in discovery to make sure that if they do come to us, that training is going to solve the problem in the first place. Of course, when that happens, I'm really fortunate because I've got fractional VPs of sales, I've got fractional sales enablement people, I've got fractional RevOps people, I've got someone who can come fix your marketing, and they all come from a gap selling perspective. So we can actually solve for all of those things. But to your question, I think this is the heart of sales, is not just looking for a place to sell, but diagnosing in such a way that you can tell your prospect, look, based on what you told me, you actually don't need sales training, or actually, sales training won't solve your problem. What you need to do is go fix this. And then come back to me, right? Later. How many people you think are doing that? How many times do you think salespeople are like, you know what? Actually, you shouldn't buy anything from me right now.
I doubt it a lot from a lot of calls I see. I think we love it. It sounds like if you put our calls next to your calls, that there'd probably be very similar conversations of trying to talk people out of it rather than talking people into it. One of the things I wanted to discuss with you was it's a bit of a funny old word in the world of sales, and I think it gets. I think it's a skill that gets treated the wrong way. I want to talk about urgency. So straight away, when I think of urgency, my head flashes to some sales rep saying, "You've only got till the end of the month to get this price." That's probably your basic way of creating urgency and building tension in the sales process. What do you think, from a gap point of view, are some strategies that help you highlight the gap to motivate the prospects to take action?
Yeah, I think folks when they think about urgency, they always say creating urgency. You can't create urgency. It's either there or it's not there, right? Mm. So, and that, to your point, Jack, is like part of the problem, right? They think our job is to create urgency. So now we're going to manufacture, i.e. manipulate, our way into making the prospect feel like there's urgency there for them to buy, when really the only urgency is my sales manager is breathing down my neck and I need to hit my quota, right? That's your urgency. That's not their urgency. So I'd say you don't create it. You find it, first of all. Is it there? And that's going to come to the size of the problem and the cost of an action, right? So how long can I go on with this problem bubbling up in my organization and causing these impacts before something really bad happens? How long can I tolerate the intolerable, untenable situation that I have today without me losing my job, having to lay people off, right? Like not hitting my growth target, not being able to fundraise, whatever it is. And it's your job as the salesperson to take that thread during discovery of root cause, business problem, impact, help them to see that thread, and then have a real conversation around, okay, so if you do not solve this problem with me, knowing that if you don't solve this problem, XYZ is going to happen in 6 months. Walk me through how you're going to solve that problem, if not with me. And most often the answers that I get, and I think that most of us get, is that they're going to DIY, right? We're usually not listening. We're not losing to our competitors. We're losing to the prospect doing it themselves. And so I think putting that competitor on the table and then having them say to you, well, if we don't buy a tool, if we don't use a partner, then we're just going to do it ourselves. So walk me through what that looks like. Because you haven't, this is what I'm thinking in my head, you haven't done it by yourself up until this point. You've just let the wound fester. So now, okay, you're going to do it yourself. What does that look like? What resources will you look? How long will that take? How will you measure whether you are actually solving the problem? Like, what metrics are you going to measure your success? Leading indicators, not just 6 months later, we figure out we still aren't hitting the number, right? What metrics are you going to be looking at to say, yes, we're doing this right and this is working? And when I start to ask questions like that, I'm really trying to understand, can they solve it by themselves before they get to the cliff? And is there anything that they're missing in that story that they're telling right now that I can help them with? That I can go, have you considered this? Have you considered that? Right? And my goal in that scenario is just to help them see what is the cost of an action. And what is the cost of trying to do it myself? Because listen, I can go downstairs right now and like run off to Home Depot and I can buy the stuff and I can go put in new floors in my house. Or I could hire someone to do it. If I go hire someone to do it, it's going to take 2 days. If I hire myself to do it, it's probably going to take 2 months and it's going to look like shit. Right? Mm. And I might have to pay them to come fix it in the end. So do they have 2 months or do they have 2 days before they hit the cliff? There's your urgency.
I like it. It's great when you start talking to people and you say, well, why don't you train them? Yeah, I could, but I've got the time. And then they start talking themselves out of it. Rachel, I wanted to ask you a really honest question. Is that okay before I proceed?
Please.
There's so much knowledge around and there's so many brilliant books and like just listen to you. You're a fountain of knowledge. But why are so many salespeople just getting it wrong and fucking it up?
How much time do we have, Jack?
21 minutes and a half.
They're getting it wrong because we in the sales world still believe that our job is to sell. And everyone from leadership to, you know, the sales team to customer success, like all the way through, every single person in a revenue engine still thinks that it's the salesperson's job to sell, close, right? And because of that, there's this pressure put on salespeople that actually puts them in opposition to the people that they proclaim they want to help. If I am attached to this agenda of mine that I have to sell, and of course I am attached to it because I hear that every day, like that is the message that I'm getting from my manager. Everyone's breathing down my neck. You have to close the deal. You have to meet the number. Did you close them, right? How are you, what's the next meeting? How are you going to close them in the next meeting? Everything is like this pressure on me to do the wrong thing, not to do the right thing that actually works. Because when we say to people, sell, what we really mean is shove your product down their neck until they choke on it. And then try and give them a discount to swallow, right? And then what we do then is we go out into the world and we go, we just love helping people. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because if you did, you wouldn't treat them that way. So I kind of position it like this. In the sales world, we're calling the salesperson the pharmacist. I come to you and I go, here's my prescription, and you give me the drug. And then maybe you give me a little counseling around what the drug does and not to take it, and to make sure I take it with food, and how to use the drug and what the side effects of the drug might be, right? But salespeople are not the pharmacist. They're the doctor. They're the doctor of the business world. And so we've got the job all wrong. The job is to be the doctor. The job is to say, okay, I've got no skin in the game here. I don't have a drug sitting behind me that I'm just hoping you say something that I can, you know, write that prescription and send you off. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is, with a completely open mind and open heart, use my own expertise and just really be present and say, this person came to me and something hurt, something's broken. And I need to find out why, what's at the root cause, so that I can diagnose what's going on for them in a way that highlights their current state, so they walk away from me knowing whether they should change or not, why they should change, what bad thing is going to happen if they don't change, and then finally, why they should change to me. And my goal when I go into any conversation with a prospect is just to help them answer those questions. That's it.
And I suppose based on that, because when you lay it out like that, it makes sense to us. Me and Jack are smiling all the way through talking to you. It makes perfect sense to us. This is the stuff that we adopt in our business as well. Do you think salespeople are born or made based on that? Because some of that requires a particular skill set that maybe can't be taught. And some of it definitely is just you've thought about it in the wrong way. So do you think you can meet a natural salesperson, or have you never met one?
I believe salespeople are made, but there are some intrinsic qualities that you have to have in sales, and they aren't the ones that are generally highlighted. So if you lack empathy, you're probably not going to be a great salesperson, no matter what sales training you go through. If you lack curiosity, if you lack problem solving and really strong analytical skills, you have to be wicked smart to be a great salesperson, which I think is a surprise to a lot of people, actually. I don't think people think we're smart. If they did think we were smart, I don't think that they would be trying to constantly dumb us down. Let's give them a script. Let's build an acronym, like, so they can remember things. You know, like, if we don't put the C for closing in there, they might forget, right? Like, that's another reason it's broken, is because we treat salespeople like they're stupid. And then we build all these structures around them to say, let's make sure they don't have to think, because we don't trust that they can think in the moment. So if you cannot be a great salesperson if you can't think analytically and be a problem solver. You can't be a great salesperson if you are not just a voracious learner. You have to constantly be learning and just like salivating for new information about your buyer, right? Like, I can't even sometimes stop myself from going down rabbit holes because I am studying my buyer before a call and their business. And I'm like, wow. You know, they sell this software into this to healthcare systems, and they solve this problem. And I'm over here studying every single thing about the problem they solve and who their buyer is before I ever get on the call, because I want to know, because I want to learn, because I want to help them, you know. But I've been trying half my career just to get salespeople to go to their fucking website before they get on the call. If you don't want to learn, you can't be a great salesperson. If you're not curious, you can't be a great salesperson. If you don't have empathy, you can't be a great salesperson. But you can be a fucking introvert, right? You don't have to be this big bombast. That's what people think it is. That's not what it is. It's not having big bombastic personalities and, right? You don't got to be that guy. Promise. True story over here. Kenan's an introvert. Did anybody know that?
No way.
True story.
Wow. I don't know if he came across as an introvert when we met him, but maybe behind closed doors. So I suppose, Beth, just to double down on what you said then, you mentioned some skills that were kind of more emotional skills, empathy, making people feel understood, all that kind of. But then you also mentioned kind of this logical, analytical piece. Do you need both to be good at selling, or is one more important than the other?
You definitely need both. And the second one is the hardest thing to teach people, right? And like, for me, I'm out here teaching our partners how to, before they can learn how to be gap selling trainers, I have to turn them into gap sellers. And it is the hardest part about teaching gap selling and coaching to gap selling is helping salespeople to be triggered in the moment by what they hear, and to take in that data that they're getting and right there on the spot be able to analyze that data like a little computer. Like, I'm over here like, boop, 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 boop. Okay, what's missing? What's missing for me to diagnose and get the whole puzzle? And you got to be able to do that in seconds. And so you can teach that analytical piece. You have to already be wicked smart to be a great salesperson, right? But you can teach that analytical piece. And we do that by teaching them how to be triggered when they hear certain things. For example, the define everything concept, right? So the minute that we hear someone say something to us like, oh, I need more. I need to grow faster. I need to improve this. I need to reduce that, right? We're automatically triggered. We teach the reps to be triggered when they hear anything vague in the customer response to a question. And the minute they hear something vague, they go, can you define more? Can you define faster? Can you define improve, right? And so they are triggered to display these analytical behaviors. And that's a little harder to teach, but it can be taught, but you're probably gonna have to bring in the professionals.
I love that. It's like teaching a dog how to do it, which I think is brilliant. It's the same way our favorite sales question. I know you say there are no like sales questions. Our favorite is, what do you mean? When you say you need to grow ridiculous amounts, what do you mean? So it's that defining. Rachel, I've got time for one more question, and I've been saving this one for the end. I am a sales leader, and I believe that all of my leads and prospects should be BANT qualified. Why am I wrong?
Oh, good golly. You saved this one for the end? I'm gonna let Keenan rant on BANT, okay? And I don't think I don't see a lot of sales organizations using BANT anymore. I see them using MEDPIC, which is, I guess, to me, it's like kind of the 2023 version of BANT, a little more thorough, if you will, as a qualifying process. The reason that things like budget and authority and need and timing should not be used to qualify whether somebody is a good prospect for you or not is because they have everything to do with you. They're qualifying for you. They're not qualifying for them. So what I mean by that is, you're saying with those things, are they qualified to buy my stuff? Do they have the money to buy myself? Are they the person who legally can sign on the dotted line to buy my stuff? Did they already come to me telling me that they need my stuff? And do they not have a contract with somebody else, or that contract is up so they can buy my stuff right now? Everything about that is selfish. Everything about that is focused on you. None of it is focused on them. So again, going back to manipulation and being scum, those things kind of make you scummy. Instead, you should be thinking about, should they buy my stuff? Should they? And should they buy my stuff is, do they have a problem that is intolerable and untenable? And if they don't solve it quite quickly, really bad things are going to happen. And are they willing to acknowledge that and do what it takes to go on that journey to fix it? Are they willing to do what it takes? Because change is hard. Changing an organization is really hard. You could change one of these tools, and now you got to go teach everybody how to do it, and they're all going to bitch about it because they don't like it for like 6 months to a year, and you got to hear about it, and they're going to mess it up, and there's going to be problems caused along the way. Like, are they willing to take on everything they have to take on to solve that problem? And those are the metrics that you should be qualifying on, because those are the metrics they're using in their brain as a human being, right? Like, I think everybody thinks Keenan like pulled gap selling out of his crazy ass, whatever is going on up here, this world that's living up here for him. It's a dangerous world. We try not to go in there, but he did it. What a lot of people don't know is that gap selling is actually built on the neuroscience behind why human beings decide to change. So when we talk about the qualifiers we use, which is, do they have a problem that you solve, right? Are they willing to admit they have a problem? Are they willing to go on the journey to fix the problem? And are they going on the journey with you? Where have you heard those? Have you ever heard those qualifiers before? Anywhere else in the world have you heard them?
therapist.
Therapist? Anyone ever heard of AA?
Yeah.
Right? They like, have you heard the Lord's Prayer?
Yeah. Lawyers probably start off a process like that with you when you're sitting down with a new lawyer.
Right. It's all based on how we human beings decide to change. So why would your qualifiers not be in line with how human beings decide to change and instead be on arbitrary things like budget, need, and timing and authority, which, by the way, authority doesn't even exist anymore. Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And I knew that's why I wanted to ask you. I always like to think about sales in the world of like dating, of like you would never go up to somebody and try and qualify whether they were good for you without even finding out if they were interested. Just before I try and chat you up, can I just make sure that you've got X amount of money in that? And I'm sure people do this. It's just crazy. Rachel, I've enjoyed having you on so much. We loved having Keenan. We're big, big fans of the book. If people want to work with you, find you, get in touch, where should they be looking for you?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm the only Rachel May, M-A-E. I'm the only one. And you can find us at salesgrowth.com. There's a ton of resources there available to you if you're trying to do this yourself as an individual contributor. And then, of course, if you're a sales leader, just book a meeting. And we'll show you what real discovery looks like.
Shit, there we go. I might have to book myself in. I just want the sales growth journey. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
so much for having me, y'all. It's been fun.